Back in the day, when you were asked what you wanted to be, the answers were almost predictable: doctor, engineer, teacher. But today, the future of work is not clear-cut. With the rise of AI, many of the jobs our current school children will take don't even exist yet. We are preparing young people for a world that is changing rapidly. The real question is, how do we make sure that what we are teaching today truly reflects the mindset, skills, and expectation of tomorrow's workforce? And in some instances, it might even be nurturing entrepreneurship right from classroom. Welcome to Dare to Disrupt, the podcast where we unpack the biggest shift in education, technology, and AI, one conversation at a time. I am Dare, and today we are deep diving into how school can bridge the gap between education and industry, and how some of these initiatives are helping students, especially young women, to see themselves as leaders in AI-powered future. To help us unpack this, I am joined by Abeda, a leader in this realm. Rather than me introducing you and reading all of your long bio, I would like you to introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much for having me here today. So I'm Abeda Nathar, Senior Director of Digital Learning at GEMS Wellington International School, also a GEMS Education AI Excellence Fellow. It's a new role that I've started this year. So I've been in education for over 15 years. And I think it's interesting when you said you introduced us with what is it we wanted to be when we were younger. I always wanted to be a teacher, but I don't think I prepared how much of a teacher, not just inside the classroom, outside the classroom. So I work a lot with embracing digital technology and creating those spaces and environments for students to grow with embracing digital technology and more recently AI as well.
Right. Thank you very much for that. And one of the questions that was posed by our previous guest was around in today's age that AI is rapidly changing. What is one skill that you think that student needs to have to prepare them for the future of workforce?
I think this is lots of educators will agree with this. It's that critical thinking. It's we are using AI, generative AI, and we're using these models a lot more fluidly in everything we do. But are we questioning it? And it's as simple as I don't like the tone and the prompting, and I don't like, change this, change that. It's what we're trying to establish is it's there, and we're using it, but we are still in charge of how we think about things and how we deal with what the output is. And we don't just say, oh, yep, that's the output. I'm taking that and I'm going to run with that. No, challenge it further. Right. And when we keep that critical thinking alive, we keep that learning journey for students alive and going.
Right. And when you mentioned critical thinking, how do you do that practically in the classroom?
So I did it yesterday, actually. It was quite interesting. We were looking at gamified learning and the students.
Right.
We had a student voice lesson. So it's a student was using a generative AI tool in the class, and something came out in the output, which as I was supporting them, I was like, what does that mean? And it was about gamification, earning badges. And I think a particular world war was referenced. And I said, so you're talking about gamification. Do you want this reference? Is
Right.
that is it right for the audience? The
Right.
young children that you're presenting to. And it's that asking the student to think and say, is that a representation of what I want to include in what I'm going to deliver?
Wow.
AI was giving a lovely example of it, that the soldier who has the badges is the same as a child who might get the certain badges in a game that
Right.
makes them feel like they've achieved something. But to encourage that child to say what would be more appropriate. And it was at first he may not have understood, but once I said and broke it down, he said, no, this actually doesn't represent what I want to deliver. And it's keeping that alive still to say, is what's produced, does it match my purpose of what I'm doing? And that's the critical thinking that the student still needs to establish and still needs to think about.
Exactly. And what I get from what you've just said now is that the relationship between teachers and student relationship is still very key in this age.
Of course.
And, for example, trying to help them in questioning what the output might be in
Of
terms of
course.
what generative AI is.
No, definitely. And we cover at our school, we cover an AI and ethics academic integrity program, and it's delivered to all students from year four all the way up until year 13. And the idea is whatever comes out from AI, for example, my favorite one is a boardroom. Let's get a picture of a boardroom. Let's ask ChatGPT, and it can't be on my account because I've already done this. So let's do it on a no account. What comes up? And as soon as the picture comes up, you have how many people are there? What are the genders? What's the diversity? What's the representation? The teacher's still there to do that. And a teacher's still there to get the students to not just absorb whatever we is produced from any Gen AI tool. And you know, even the chatbots and teaching the students about it's not a human, it's a chatbot. It's just giving you, you know, don't the over-reliance. And, exactly. And our program encourages thoughtfulness with all of this. Yeah. And it's the students know it, they know it, but they're not, you know, I think I look at the recent trend, the recent 6-7 trend that's gone around.
Yeah, yeah, 6-7.
One of the things I said I said to my children is, do you know where it came from? They didn't need to know where it came from. Yeah, yeah. And this is a trend that we're seeing in the young generation, is maybe there are these environments and these in media and you know, videos and things, are they just absorbing them? Yeah. It's still our job to say, we love 6-7. It's so Absolutely. Much fun. I get what it does to you, but you still need to know where it came from, even if it doesn't have a meaning. I know it, even I'm not sure what the meaning is, but it's okay. It brings you enjoyment. Yeah. However, you still need to ask yourself, because one day you'll turn around and say, what did I do that for? What was the purpose? And the same with when students are using any.
I remember going back home and I heard the 6-7 online from Instagram or somewhere. I can't remember. And I went home and said, I'm going to test this with my kids. And I just went home and, as soon as I stepped into the house, I said 6-7, and they started laughing. Like, where did you hear that from? Come on! I'm like, come on, guys. I also know what's going on out there. You know, and it's really nice that you've mentioned gender, in terms of what we come out when you try to, you know, prompt a boardroom from using ChatGPT or any other AI tool, and that's one of the bias that we're talking about, isn't it? And in terms of gender, you're working on an initiative at the moment, as I understand, and that's about girls in AI.
Yeah.
What's the inspiration behind that, and what are you trying to achieve with that?
Actually, you were part of that event that was the inspiration. Exactly, yeah. So the AI Nexus conference, when I hosted it in April, it was an amazing. We had so many of our partnerships turning up and being part of it. We had people like yourselves who just wanted to come and see the excitement. Yeah. So it was the networking session that we had following the presentation where the swarm of girls surrounded me and they had all these questions. And I just looked around and I just thought, the representation is there in our school. I feel it's confidently there, but maybe in the wider, you know, the wider communities and the schools across Dubai, is that representation there enough? Is it there in the media? Is it there on the global platforms of all the CEOs of the big companies? Maybe it's not there. And I just thought to myself, I know how to twist people's arm to say, come do things for me. You know that firsthand. Yeah, yeah.
I have to learn some of that from you.
but that, you know, and I have to do something. I have to bring something forward. And I just remember thinking, I want something for the girls. And I think women in AI were part of that. And their inspiration, you know, kind of said, well, you guys are doing it for the women, I want to do it for the girls now. Aww. And they supported the idea really well. University of Birmingham, yourself, you also partnered with us, and we have Revision Dojo and we have EdTech Academy. And I just thought, we have our school, I could provide it to our school, but could you imagine if we network across the whole of the UAE? Yeah. And I remember coming up with the logo over the summer. It's not fantastic, but what it is it speaks volumes.
Exactly.
And one of the things actually with the logo, which I challenged my students on, was, you know, it's not going to be a girl with a ponytail in the background. It's a brain for a reason. Because though it's girls in AI, it is about we're raising the profile of girls, but it's also about, let's just not follow those automatic stereotypes that maybe we've grown up with.
And
let's,
I think it's about challenging the status quo, isn't it? Saying that, we have something, we want to have something for girls as well. And because it's about AI technology and all of that, does not necessarily mean it's not for girls.
We don't have to promote it as you know, with the girl biases that have always been there. I like that, and I like that we had the launch that was amazing, absolutely amazing. We were hit by Dubai traffic which no complaints, but we were hit by it. So we had a few late starters, so at the beginning of the session I remember the first few rows empty, and within 20 minutes I just looked over my shoulder, the entire auditorium, it was at GEMS Dubai American Academy, they hosted it for us, was full. And I just at that moment thought, wow. these teachers.
That's a proud moment, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, these teachers trust me.
Yeah.
Trust me to bring their children from Abu Dhabi. Yeah. We had Al Ain, we had people coming, Sharjah, yeah. coming together, sat there. And at the pit of my stomach, my daughter sat in the theatre as well. And I'm just thinking, these girls will walk away with something. Exactly. They'll walk away with feeling part of something, yeah. with an inspiration from the women on the stage. And I gave a personal shout out to Professor Yusra. Because I said really? To the girls, she's not with us. She'll be with us in January. But yeah. she is my inspiration.
Absolutely.
She's someone. And I want them to feel, to walk away. And I think they did. But, exactly. you know, we have our next one in January now. And, yeah. and I'm thinking, you know, one of the things that maybe I'm reflecting on is voice. So we've made our focus for January's event to be definitely a keynote, a fireside chat with some of our visitors, but also the students want a voice. So right. our workshops are going to be led around student voice, where all the activities would be led by them.
Right.
And it's going to be, give them the mic. Let's run with the show. But I think my inspiration comes from, and it's not about abilities. I always say to my daughter, the sports team does require you to have a certain amount of stamina. It yeah. requires you to have a certain amount of records that you've set, a certain exactly. amount of trophies on your yeah. shelf. But and I think this is how you started it with
exactly.
what are the skills that the students actually need when they go into the workplace? They actually need to be able to communicate student voice. They actually need to be able to you know, lead a room. And, right. and we're looking at leadership with this and looking to have those soft skills. And that's one of the things of the girls in AI. It's not what it's not you have to be a certain program or you have to even know what AI is.
Exactly.
Do you want to be part of something and have a voice? Because you are impacted directly by AI.
Exactly.
So I know I've taken a big part of your segment here, but I'm so passionate that
I'm really
we
happy
make
to
this
listen to this
here.
And I'm sure the audience will really love to hear what you've got to share with us as well. And it's when you mentioned that that when you look back you realize that teachers actually trust you. I think that boils down to leadership skills, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And talking about leadership skills, I wanted to know, what does leadership look like in school in this age mm-hmm. of AI? And do you think that leaders should lead by example, for example, or just say, this is what we need to do? Because honestly, sometimes it can be frustrating, you know, when you're trying to implement something and people are not moving along and you know it's going to be really useful to enhance teaching and learning experience in the classroom.
Of course.
But you also don't want to be that leader that's saying, this is what you have to do and mm-hmm. all of that. So how do you strike that balance to make sure that people actually embrace those kind of technology?
I think we're in a very large school. One of the things my experience is it's leadership could be in a meeting, but predominantly it's outside of the meeting. It's in the corridors. It's by the coffee cart. It's by the stairs. It's by the duty.
Right.
The leadership starts there. It starts with acknowledging each other. Mm. And that's the example you set. It's not about the work you do, it's about who you are. Start with the leadership there.
Right.
Start with the, and you know, cultures are very, all these cultures coming together in the UAE is amazing and something to be celebrated, but it's that acknowledging each other, respecting each other's values, but yet still coming together
right.
for a joint purpose. And any leader that identifies that I've got a team, it's diverse, and I'll get different things from different people at different
right.
touch points of the year, I can't measure them all against one rubric. And I lead
yeah.
The AI core team,
yeah.
A successful team yeah. of teachers. We have teachers from every phase and every department of the school coming together.
Yeah.
And I throw it out then. The first thing I did was, here's a policy. Can you guys tell me what it means to you? What it doesn't mean to your department? So as we're doing the feedback, I had one member of staff saying, I'm from the, you know, the inclusion department, and I don't think I contribute very well here.
Yeah.
And it was, no, you not knowing maybe what you think you should know about AI is what I need.
Right.
Because the questions you ask
exactly.
will direct my strategy. So leadership is not only surrounding yourself with the people that get things done or know everything, it's surrounding yourself with people that are ready to learn.
Exactly.
She came out of her comfort zone to join that meeting.
Yeah.
She's maybe feeling lots overwhelmed, thinking
absolutely.
Everyone else is an expert.
Yeah.
I'm not the expert. But
yeah.
no, it's valuing that opinion.
Yeah.
If you encompass
yeah.
that in your leadership, you have empathy. You know, you have that gentleness. And you'll know that you will give me something that maybe someone else won't, but we don't measure it and say that all the outputs must be the same. It's that intention and that drive that brings you to come to have a seat at that table.
Oh, that's really amazing to hear, because I've actually witnessed it firsthand, your leadership skills, you know, during that session, the next session as well. And I see how you've given students the role to take ownership of that session as well. And they've asked so many kind of very useful questions, thought-provoking questions as well. And I could see the confidence because they were given the space to be able to, you know, to shine. And that's something that I really, really took back with me that day, because what it meant is that sometimes we have to leave students. We have to make sure that students are involved in the conversation and making sure that we get their perspective before we plan anything for them. And this is usually my approach. I'm very, very student-centric in my approach. I always like to, I call it pull approach, whereby I pull the information from student rather than pushing it to them. When I get the feedback, and then I can design something that will actually benefit them based on their feedback. And so, having said that, how would you say your student-centric approach is in terms of ensuring that students understand how to use AI ethically and responsibly?
So we have our guidance that goes out for teachers, one-page wonder. We also have, for our students, we have some guidance that goes out regularly. But we introduced something called the traffic light system. And this is where our students designed this. It was three icons, red, amber, and green. And the opportunity for the students to put it in their own work to say, I've used AI or I haven't used AI. But also teachers in their planning could maybe have a slide up, and on that slide, the activity is there, and they have a green symbol. When it's got AI on there, it's got the little icon in the background, and it shows students that you are free to use AI in this particular task. It's that help supporting them with self-regulation when it comes to using AI for any of the work they do. And also, I think we've recently is to source AI. So if you've used it, give us the reference, give us the prompt that you've used. I know that this is coming up a lot with our older students, is be open, be honest about it. If you've used it to help you debug, tell us what questions and what prompts you had. Keep a log of that. Keep an idea of that. But I think the voice comes in. We have at our school, we have you know, AI and ethics, and we're at the team. It's a student team, and they come to me and they say, this is what they want to do. I run around in the background doing all the paperwork, the risk assessment. And when it comes together, I'm sat there. But then you do hand over. We recently had a cybersecurity expert come in to talk to our students. And every cybersecurity talk I've done always leads to AI. Always goes down to privacy. And I left it to the students, and I to just sit there and to listen to the students ask their questions. And one of the questions was quite controversial, because the student says, well, maybe I benefit from the dark web. And I sat back and said, right, let's see where this goes. And he goes, maybe there are opportunities where some of these things, you know, the layers of the internet that are maybe not transparent, maybe there are some benefits for students. And it was an interesting conversation. Yeah. And it's, you have to bring students to the table and let them have that voice. But I think I think how we started this, it's in the classroom. It starts with the facilitator, and then it starts with the extra opportunities that a school offers their students. And I think I'm the go-to for that. I have a lot of students that will come up to me and say, I've got this idea, incorporates this, what can I do with it? They want a bit of mentorship. Exactly. And I think that's a good approach to have for schools. You can go full-blown, draw the line and say, we're not to use any of these apps. I think schools would, what we've done is choose what you think, you know, is suitable, where the guardrails are in place for these students, and deliver that. So I share that with my AI core team, and I say, right, I've looked at this particular tool, and I have a very big thing. I never name tools ever. Anything I've written, anything I've done, I'll never name the tool. But what I will do is say to my AI core team, go use this tool. I've tested it. I think it works in a capacity where the guardrails are up. Yeah. We can be engaged in what the child is doing, and you know, we're not out of the loop. Yeah. And ask them to deliver this. And maybe there are other schools and institutes that draw the line and say, absolutely not. And I think that works for them. But I think for us, the students do have access to all of this, whether they're with us or with their parents at home. Right. You know, they have access. That exactly. We can direct them to the access where they're, they're using it responsibly and they're using it to benefit themselves positively and to keep that critical thinking alive. I think that's our strategy at school, to celebrate the use of it, but to also have the guardrails in place. Give parents the options to opt out. If you don't want your child on that platform, we completely, you know, we have to hold this up and respect your values and let the children know that it's me and your parents, the school community and your parent community comes together to make sure you have a fruitful learning experience. And I think this is something, it's the culture of the school has to embrace this. And the fact that when I put the paperwork through for that conference in April, it was, let's do this. That's what I got from my leadership. It was, let's do this. Yeah. Who are you bringing to the table? And, you know, the excitement of this is so good that you're doing this. Whereas you have to have those platforms. And you saw what came from that.
Exactly.
We're famous for life, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I will never forget, you sent it over to me. And I looked at it and I thought, zoom in. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
I feel like that broke internet, isn't it?
For the
age. When I saw it, I was like, wow. This is massive, yeah. And I think I think that's very important in terms of recognition as well, in terms of knowing that what you're doing is actually, it actually resonates with the agenda of the overall goal on a national level. I think
because all the other pictures were the students. What we had were the leaders and the you know, people from the industry.
Yeah.
On stage, presenting to the students. It was bridging that gap. And I think we'll come back to the beginning of what you said is, what is it our students need?
Exactly.
They need this. Yeah. They need mentorship and guidance from industry experts.
It's good you've mentioned that, because in this, you know, in this age of, and I always say that you can't use yesterday's style to teach students today whilst you're preparing them for the future.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work well. It just doesn't sound properly. Mm-hmm. And it means that we have to be compliant. Like it means that we have to be up to speed.
Yes.
How are you ensuring that what is being taught in the classroom aligns with the future workforce? And it might be entrepreneurship as well. Mm-hmm. It does not necessarily mean we are training our students for, you know, going to work for someone or something.
No. It's to create those opportunities. And I think let's look at it from a step back, is there are three maybe main ones that we have in the UAE, which are fully supported by so many initiatives.
Right.
Innovation, enterprise, and sustainability. Once you embed them into your curriculum design, and I'll give you an example. My example is, we did 3D modeling computer science year 9, and I asked the students to design a classroom.
Right.
Only thing I said was 25 desks, 25 chairs, and a teacher needs a desk near the interactive whiteboard. Everything else was open to the child's creativity and the students, what they come up with. And one of the conditions was the materials must be sustainable. Innovation was, how do you want to learn? So posed it to the children, that is this working for you, table and chair? How do you want to learn? And then in terms of enterprises, you've got to sell this to this idea. You've got to sell this idea to make sure that we have classrooms that look more like this. And it's we're teaching 3D modeling. And I give the computer science example because that's my background, but we're also encouraging them to bring in these three strands within the classroom.
Yeah.
I understand in a maths lesson it could be difficult, but remember, we've got technology in there already.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the friction that we see with AI now, mathematicians had the friction with the calculator how many years ago?
Absolutely.
So technically that's the innovation is there, the calculator.
Exactly.
The sustainability is maybe not so fluidly introduced, but the enterprise is, speak. How does this make sense to you? How do you resonate with this? And maybe one of the questions that they always ask in maths is, where is this in the real world? I know where it is because I go to IKEA with my husband and I see it when he's calculating the tiles by the centimeters.
Yeah.
He's made that real world connection. But those three strands can make those real world connections for students in every single subject that they attend throughout the day. And if we can bridge that gap, when, you know, I can go to IKEA and I can see how it all fits together.
In my
time, it wasn't bridged. It was input, process, output. And it's bigger than that now. Education has to be bigger than that.
Wow. I mean, everything that you're doing it intentionally. And then you're aligning it with what is going on in the region as well.
Of course.
Which is very, very important. In terms of competency and confidence, how do you ensure that teachers are trained and upskilled to ensure that they're able to deliver that kind of learning that we're talking about, the future-focused learning in mm-hmm. the classroom.
If we're honest, maybe we accept everybody can't. Mm. But what we do have is, I'll go back to my AI core team, is from my strategy is we make sure that representation in each department, each phase is there, that can then have a ripple effect to building other people's confidence.
Right.
So I'll give you an example from year four. I have a teacher who's joining my AI core team. I train her up. I give her the support she needs. I focus on all her queries, all her concerns. We build that relationship, and she then has the confidence to go back to her team
right.
and decide what are the strategy points that I want to push for my team this term. It could be, are we looking at parent focus? Are we looking at student experiences, or are we looking at competition? And if I stood in front of the auditorium and presented to all the staff, it could be effective, but how many times do we sit through that and maybe not, it's not all being processed. Maybe there's not an opportunity for turn and talk to the person yeah. next to you and yeah. and to write things down exactly. and to be able to focus directly. So I think the strategy is to have smaller working groups that then could filter out the message, and also have an open door policy. I like I mentioned that yeah. at the coffee cart, I'll get someone who's not in my AI core team saying, oh, by the way, I'm doing this. What do you think about this? And know that you're approachable and that conversation is there. But that's always a sticking point, is not everyone will. Mm. It doesn't mean not everyone can.
Exactly. I like how you mentioned the ripple effect and all of that, because
yeah, of
we all can't be champion. We all can't be ambassador.
Yeah.
But what we can do is whatever we learn, we are able to share with our immediate community as well.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And that's why I really like the idea of community of practice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where we come together, learn something, and go and have, you know, an exponential impact on our various, community. What should parents look out for?
Okay,
in terms of, you know, ensuring the safety of their kids
yeah.
online, because this is very important. And I just wanted to know, from your own perspective, what would be a logical approach to ensure that, although you don't take it away from them
yeah,
totally,
yeah.
but they still have access to it, but...
It's not even about whether your child has access to it or not.
Exactly.
Are they looking over someone's shoulder who does exactly. have access? And when your child enters that school setting
yeah.
and there's how many other people in the classroom, yeah. you cannot eliminate the fact that your child will have exposure to it, whether it's on their device or not. But what you could do to mitigate it is, on their device, parental controls
right.
are super important. And one of the things, parental controls isn't about the parent having that full control.
Exactly.
Sit with your child and say, yeah. is what are you using this for? Open the conversation, open the dialogue, see what's being paid for.
Right.
One of the big things in the UAE would be VPNs and,
yeah.
and understanding the use of VPNs. What are they used for? You know,
right.
maybe more suitable for remote learners, whereas our students need to know that actually to use a VPN to access something that's not allowed is
exactly.
not compliant. So, you know, how many parents are checking? Are they paying for a VPN? Are they, you know,
yeah.
and is it fit for purpose?
Yeah.
It's looking at what your child's spending, is looking at what they're doing on their device. If you can't do parental controls and you've got an open relationship, open up the devices and
exactly.
talk about what
exactly.
your child's doing. Limits, daily
yeah.
limits are super, super good. Like I track it when there are exams
yeah.
and I know my daughter will say, I need an extra hour if there's internal assessments on
yeah.
their device.
Yeah.
It's keep those conversations. It's super, super busy. Yeah. I get that. But keep those conversations
monthly
yeah. as much as you can.
And it's not always about safety. It's about screen time as well to protect their mental health as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
all of that.
One of the things is you know, eye health. The health of the eyes is looking at something that's a short distance for a long period of time can have the impact. You need to stretch the muscles. And a simple strategy that
yeah.
if you want to be on your device, let's go in the garden when the air quality
is
being proven to be good in Dubai. But get that sunshine that.
Yeah.
You're not constantly looking at a short distance. You're exercising
yeah.
between
yeah.
looking at the birds flying in the
exactly.
sky and looking
yeah.
at your device and finding that balance. Same with reading a book, actually.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it only to devices. It's any activity you do,
right.
do it under a healthy premise. But I think one of the things we've been doing successfully as part of UAE Cybersecurity Awareness Month are parental support sessions
yeah.
where we call the parent in. We say, bring your phone, bring your child's device, talk to us about what you want, let us help you find the most suited
right.
App that can help you have the parental controls that work for you, because it isn't one size that fits all. I have a very strict policy. Every website comes through to me and I have to approve it. But maybe that doesn't work for a busy, you know, family that maybe don't have those touch points with their phone and their devices.
How important do you think it is to ensure that all of these stakeholders come together to work towards a common goal?
I don't think we can have them all in the room at the same time.
Exactly.
But what I do is like a parallel approach where we have the parent workshop and the same week we have the child workshop that goes on. So then at least the parent workshops are the best. I'll tell you why, because the parents want help with the scams and with the, you know, with the phishing emails that come out. Yeah. They are so, they, you know, they're involved, there for a purpose and they're like, I've had that experience and I don't want it again. And what do I need to look out for? If you have those, and that's why I love the UAE Cybersecurity Awareness Month. I squeeze it all in, but can I get the students and the parents in the room? I don't know if that's the most effective.
Yeah.
I think this maybe, but like what I would do is plug it in so it all happens simultaneously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then those conversations at home with the communication that we send out as a school,
right,
with these opportunities for these drop-ins all come together. And I'm known for this, is sending out those Google forms where I just need to know where you're at, touch points. I need to know at the beginning of the year how parents feel about their child being on a device. So I have to send that out, especially to new parents. Maybe they've not been in a school where there is a bring your own device policy. Really need to understand what their needs are. Only if you do that can you strategize. So if I didn't do that survey in the beginning of September to know what the parents' requirements were, I wouldn't have been able to know that we need weekly parental support sessions, drop in, come to the cafe, grab a coffee, come sit with our cybersecurity expert who can just talk you through whether you're ready to move on to having parental controls or whether you can find another solution. I only discovered that need for that in such a high volume through voice. I talk about student voice, parent voice, teacher voice. Even with upskilling teachers, you have to throw out a survey and say, what are you a champion of? Where do you want us to support you? Exactly. Let teachers fill this in. And if it means you can create a program, a professional development opportunity or some course or some put something out there, even if it's in a newsletter to say, have a look at this. It's listening to what they need and strategizing in that way. Doesn't work in all situations,
of course,
but in my... You know, the line of work I do where things are constantly changing. What we were using 2 years ago, we're not using now. We have to keep up with, especially with legacy. Maybe people are too held out onto old systems that you're using. New staff are coming in. Have they got something new to bring?
Exactly.
Let's tap into that.
And I think that's a very good inclusive approach as well. I think you're trying to be inclusive in your approach. You don't just believe that one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like we need to hear from you and that we're not just going to say, this is how to go about it, isn't it? And thank you very much for that insight. And this brings us to the last question about, if you have one question for our next guest, what would that be?
My favorite question. And it'll hopefully challenge them, but it's, what actions need to be taken to disrupt the current assessment models in reaction to the introduction of AI?
Disruption, what a way to round up this episode. To our listeners, how do you think education should evolve to prepare students for the future of work in an AI-driven world? We would love to hear your perspective. Share your thought with us at www.d2dpodcast.com or contact us on all social media platforms at D2Disrupt. Your ideas will help us shape this conversation going forward. Until next time, stay curious, stay disruptive.